Thus, Native American students miss school at rates higher than the national average. KLCC's Brian Bull talked to one educator in Oklahoma who's worked to bring down absenteeism and truancy in her community.
Holly Youngbear is Cheyenne Arapaho and works as the Watonga School's Indian Education Director.
I retired 2 years ago, but they couldn't find anybody to take my place, so I stepped back in and the school let me come back to work 3 days a week.
Youngbear says her district's absenteeism rates is the lowest in Oklahoma. She says she knows all the families and has come by to pick up absent students from challenging home environments.
Parents who have drug problem or alcohol problems, and they just don't get their kids up on time. I go out to the homes and pick them up, take them to school, just work with the parents to get them to school.
Youngbear adds that the Cheyenne and Arapaho tribes also help with school supplies, class fees, and are rewarding good grades and attendance. Special programs also help students avoid trouble.
They have Tradition Not Addiction, and they come in and meet with the kids every month and talk about, you know, not smoke or drink or vape.
The tribal jurisdictional area for the Cheyenne Arapaho has generations of families, some who were subjected to the boarding school system. Besides the abuse and attempts at assimilation many encountered, Youngbear says this also may have caused challenges when some boarding school alumni started families.
They never knew how to actually parent when they got out of school. If you don't know how to parent, then you might not want your kids to go to school. It wasn't a priority, I guess you could say.
Youngbear's advice to school administrators who may be dealing with absent Native students is to work with families and try to get counselors or education directors from Indian education backgrounds.
You know, have good grades and lead them on the path to maybe go to college or vo-tech, or, you know, just keep them motivated.
Other challenges that can affect Native American attendance include racism, poverty, or lack of support services. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
The state of Washington is helping Native Americans access health care after decades of barriers. Eric Tigetoff has more.
Health insurers have made it difficult for tribal members to get care covered, despite state and federal laws that bar this. Vicki Lowe is head of the American Indian Health Commission, which has led efforts to remove hurdles for Native Americans. She says health insurers would try to make tribal clinics charge out-of-network rates and wouldn't honor their referrals. However, the Washington State Office of the Insurance Commissioner has come out with guidance to prevent this.
Not only will tribes have more money to help pay for services for their tribal members will get care in a more timely manner. So those two things just are really important. And insurance companies have been a barrier for that for decades.
Washington is among the first states to move forward with guidance for insurers and also enforcement of the law so that insurers will stop putting up roadblocks for tribal members to get care in the state. Todd Dixon is the tribal liaison for the Office of the Insurance Commissioner. He says one reason for releasing the guidance was that the agency had seen an uptick in complaints, the number one complaint typically coming from billing managers at clinics.
It says, hey, we have an enrolled member. He or she was seen at our clinic. We billed the insurance company. They said we're out of network, and so we're only paying 60%, and then they send a bill to the enrolled member. It's not how it works.
The insurance commissioner's office has been sending notices to insurers who violate protections for Native Americans. I'm Eric Tegadoff.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Native-designed wool blankets, jewelry, and gifts are all online for your holiday shopping convenience at 8thGeneration.com, who support this show. 8thGeneration.com. Inspired Natives, not Native-inspired. Looking to exhibit, enhance, or share your artistic talents and cultural knowledge? Crazy Horse Memorial has artist residencies, performance opportunities, and more. Application deadline is January 31st at crazyhorsememorial.org, who support this show.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
My co-host, Gary Wilcox, will return to the show next week. Tom B., born November 8, 1941, in Gallup, New Mexico, and who passed away July 25, 2024, in Albuquerque, was a true legend. It was an honor to have him as a guest on my music show, Indigenous in Music, this past June. I'm grateful to share our interview with you all. Tonight, we welcome from Gallup, New Mexico, Tom B. is in the house. Two-time Grammy-winning producer, entrepreneur, and founder of the native rock and roll band Exit since 1970. 14 albums. This guy is brewing some history. It's his first visit. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome Mr. Tom B. Hi, Tom. How you doing tonight?
Hey, Larry. How's it going up there?
I'm doing well. I'm over here in Sarasota, Florida. The sun is shining. Boy, it's like 90.
Enjoying that warm sunshine, huh?
90 degrees. What's it like over there? New Mexico.
But right now, it's kind of cold and a little bit of windy. In fact, real windy out there.
Wow, wow. Well, I'm happy to have you on the show. I've been jamming to your music all day. Good stuff.
Yeah, I've actually been listening to your station for a while now. It's very interesting and very cool.
Nice.
Yeah, very enjoyable and needed. Much needed.
Yes, yes. I just got done watching your Mystic Lake Casino concert, and boy, that made my day. I loved it.
Yeah, that was... quite a event back in 2000. It seems like it was just yesterday, but time goes by.
I know you mentioned it was your 30th anniversary. Now that was 20 years ago. So, bam, here we are, 50 years later. Salute.
Yeah.
Well, we have lots of listeners, so why don't we start by telling our listening audience a little bit about yourself and your musical journey and how it all started, and then we'll jump into the music. So, go ahead and hit the stage, Tom.
Well, my musical journey, so to speak, started back in when I was 15 years old, and from Gallup, New Mexico, I took my first trip via Greyhound bus.
Wow!
And a nice big stack left by Mama, and headed out to Hollywood to try to be a rock and roll singer, a star, whatever you want to call it.
Right?
And, and so that was my first attempt, you know, to try to be in the music business. And why I chose that is another story. But I mean, especially coming from that rural reservation border town Gallup, to want to be in the music business is really unheard of.
Oh, sure. Yes.
Especially back then, you know.
Yeah. Now, you were one of the first native bands to sign with a major record label. That was the ticket back then. Now, today, everybody's independent. What are your thoughts on record labels today?
Yeah, we were signed, actually, to Motown back in 1969, actually. And then first record was recorded in 1970 at the Motown Hitsville Studio in Detroit. And we were one of the last groups to actually have recorded in that studio, which is a very historic studio. Now it's been made into a museum.
You played with some of the top rock bands also, ZZ Top, Joe Cocker, the Beach Boys. Now, how cool was that? What did that feel like to play in front of those large crowds?
Well, it was, quite interesting because it was basically all new to us at that time as far as with the major artists. You know,
right.
Obviously we did a lot of concerts here and there around the country. But, to be able to be on the show with headliners.
It's
kind of interesting. Yeah.
And then I was reading you were toured Europe. That must have been a blast.
Yeah, well, it's kind of interesting because when we went to Italy, that was a stop. The record company that represented Motown in Europe wanted us there because to continue to promote the album because it was taking off in Europe big time, and then at the same time we were getting ready to record a second album because they were putting pressure on us, meaning the record company, to start a second album plus go on a tour to Europe there. So it was kind of a hectic time, and during that time the original lead singer of Exit, because at that time I was the manager, the booking agent, and songwriter, lyricist. And so...
You're busy.
The original lead singer dropped out of the band after about maybe 6 or 7 months after Planet Red Man was released, probably, I'd say about 6 months. And I auditioned quite a few other people to try to fill that position. And it was getting down to the nitty gritty because we had to go on the road and we were having to prepare for a second album. So I believe it was our drummer that they said, well, you know, you used to be a solo singer. Why don't you just do it because you know what we want?
Sure.
So that's how I became the lead singer of Exit after that. So it's kind of a complicated, you know, but that's actually how it happened. You know?
And you jumped right in. That's so cool.
And first of all, the reason why we even got signed to Motown is because in one of our trips to Los Angeles, in fact, that's when we were on the stage with Beach Boys in California. Most of the guys had not been out to L.A. before, and certainly not the beach.
Right.
So we went out there for that concert, and we got there with a big U-Haul, and I left them off at the beach, and then I said, I'm going to go and leave off some demo tapes at the record companies while we're here.
Right.
So I left off some demo tapes, and we did a concert and came back home. And about 2 or 3 weeks later, I got a call from a producer at Motown that said, you left off a demo tape a few weeks back? And I said, yeah, I think I did. And he said, well, there's a song on there we'd like to record with a Jackson 5.
Right on.
And so I said, what's keeping you? You know? So the next day they flew a person from the publishing company to sign a contract for that song. And that was at the same time that Motown was starting their label called Rare Earth, which was for non-black artists. And they introduced that label using a group, a white R&B group from Detroit called Rare Earth.
Mm-hmm.
They actually weren't really called Rare Earth, but they had them use that name to launch the label.
Sure.
So from that point on, they were known as Rare Earth, but they had nothing to do with the ownership of the label. And then they signed us as the second artist on the group, I should say, or artist on that label. And that's how we became on the Motown label. And then Plight of the Red Man was born.
Right,
which was
on
an album that needed to be, that album needed to be heard. It needed to be recorded. It was basically the gospel of the American Indian according to the truth. And sometimes the truth hurts. But, I think just like Russell Means told me,
mm-hmm.
that album was way ahead of its time. You know, so
yes.
I just have to agree in some ways, you know, because other people were not ready for any type of message,
mm-hmm.
and particularly the government or, you know, America wasn't ready for that message.
Tom's life spanned 82 remarkable years, during which he touched the hearts of many with his kindness, wisdom, and love. A man of many talents and passions, he approached everything with a tireless work ethic and an unwavering dedication to excellence. During our last interview, he shared one of his favorite songs with me, and I'm honored to play it for you now. This is titled Color Natural Gone.
People have made the colors change.
let's continue with our interview with Tom B. And then you started a record company, Sound of American Records.
Well, years later, after the Texas thing started dying down, you know, I did start living years later after the exit thing started dying down. Some of the original members were dropping out one by one.
Mm-hmm.
And I recruited other players to just kind of keep it alive for as long as possible. And finally, I knew that, you know, that it was coming to an end, and you have to realize that.
Yeah.
So I had so much experience in the music business that I felt maybe I should start a label to introduce other Native artists to the public, to the world, actually.
Right.
And I started by basically securing the rights for Motown for Plyle Redmond and Son of Warrior. And those were the first two albums that I released on the Soar Sound of America Records. That's what cool. Launched the label. And then from there, of course, I recorded a bunch of stuff with other artists from across the country, and that's how Soar was born. And we kept that label going for a good 25 years. And you know, we had success with a lot of ups and downs. And mm-hmm. and also, you know, just like anything else, you also have to throw in controversy. You know,
yeah,
it's just a crazy business.
Sure.
It's a crazy business.
Yeah. So you still keep track of rock bands today, Native rock bands?
Well, I try, you know, mm-hmm. and I'm impressed with the fact that so many young people are into the arts, music, films, yeah. et cetera, and they're really now into what's available to them from a technical standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
They're very into technology, and that really impresses me because I see a lot of artists out there getting involved independently. Because see,
yep.
really nowadays you really don't need a label per se. Mm-hmm. You can basically expose yourself and market yourself all over the place.
Sure.
via internet, you know.
Yep.
And so that's what a lot of these artists are doing. And that was not available to artists back then.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you were just on your own and you did what you could to get noticed. You know,
right.
But now, I mean, today. But now, you know, obviously, a lot of these independent labels, once that they get recognized and they start getting a lot of notoriety, then these major labels will still step in and offer them a contract.
Yep.
But in the beginning, I think what they do, meaning the major labels, is they kind of sit back and see exactly and view the entire landscape of what's going on in the music business around the world, you know, not just
yeah.
here in America, but around the world.
Yep.
Because of the internet is around the world, you know, so they're more hip to what's going on in the music industry with young people nowadays. So
mm-hmm.
yeah, it's a whole different ballgame. I mean, the
yep.
music business has changed tremendously. It's not what it used to be, you know?
Right. So I was reading, you're a Namester. You still a Namester?
Well, in my heart, I still, yeah.
Yeah, I'm a Namester, too.
Riding the water pony, you know?
Cool.
Still riding that water pony, you know?
Yeah, and the struggle continues. Yes.
The struggle continues, yes.
Tom, any advice for up-and-coming musicians that are trying to get into the music scene today?
Well, here's what I tell a lot of young people nowadays when I see them, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
Don't ever let your dreams die, because dreamers make the world go round. Dreamers keep it spinning. But you can't be a dreamer unless you're a doer.
There you go. Good advice. I love it.
And I'm also, you know, I'm also a very spiritual person. So, you know, I mean, I believe in the Creator. I believe in a higher power. And so, you know, I've always let that be kind of a guiding light to what I do in all my decisions that I make, you know, so
mm-hmm.
I'm very happy with myself now.
Good.
You know, and I don't really have to prove anything anymore. I think,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's all out there, you know,
yep.
and I've done my best to you know, help Native artists in the music industry to get exposed and get out there and showcase what they have. But when all is said and done, what's really sad, so many of these artists, because they aren't experienced, they don't really appreciate all the hard work that you do for them, you know, and that kind of makes me sad.
Mm-hmm.
Because you really work hard and it's not easy, you know, it's very difficult, especially
yes.
with all the racism and everything else that you have to fight all along the way. Soar had to fight the retail outlets, distributors, et cetera, just to get them to listen to our records, you know, and to bring our CDs into the retail stores. Mm-hmm. It was a battle, and artists think, you know, it's easy, and when all said and done, I found in the artists, you know, not all of them, but so many of them don't really appreciate the work you do for them.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of stabbed me in kind of a, one of the reasons why I think that I decided to close the label. Yes.
Tom, congratulations for all your hard work you have done and being a positive role model for our youth. I'm very happy. Salute.
And thank you very much for having me on the show. I appreciate it. And God bless everybody.
In closing, I want the world to know that we'll deeply miss Tom and the incredible music he shared with us. To honor his legacy, I'm going to play one more song from Exit. Here is Reservation of Education.
We'll be right back.
thank you for tuning in to Indigenous in the News and supporting us and our entrepreneurs. Indigenous in the News has been produced by Larry Kay. Our engineer is Paul Salvatore. Our theme music is composed by Lenny Long. Today's show has been recorded at the Two Buffalo Studios in Bradenton, Florida. National Native News is provided by Native Voice One with Antonio Gonzalez. Come visit us at Indigenous in Music and Arts to hear all of our past shows and learn all about our great programs that we provide. Until next time, from all of us here at Indigenous in the News, have yourself a wonderful week and safe journeys. Indigenous in the News is a production of Indigenous in Music and Arts.
Indigenous in the News. Well, what's going on? Oh, there we go.
Indigenous in the News. That's a new program for us, I think.
It is indeed. And yeah. You're listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM, Minneapolis, and around the world at KFAI.org. Non-commercial, community-powered radio. Support for this program comes from KFAI listener members and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Programming on KFAI is made possible in part through grants in the state of Minnesota and listeners like you. Son las... es la una con 57. It's about 3 minutes before two. And bienvenidos a Corazón Latino.
Así es. Hola, Carla.
Hola.
¿Cómo estás?
Bien.
Yeah, we're on a few minutes early, so let's take advantage of that and listen to our beautiful theme, Las Palmeras con Martirio, aquí en Corazón Latino, KFAI.
Está empezando a padecer desde que yo te conocí.